This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into The Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in The Daily Book Club. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 661. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and sea caves and surf lessons, craft classes, slave markets, and the end of the world as we go to the Algarve region in southern Portugal. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Portugal. I'd like to welcome to the show Eileen Cotter-Wright from PureWander.com, who's come to talk to us about southern Portugal. Eileen, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And why are we talking about southern Portugal? Why should someone go there?
It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. And I've been very fortunate to go to a lot of places. And I think that there's something really special about this sleepy, but also lively place down in southern Portugal, for sure.
Excellent. And do you have an itinerary that you're going to recommend for us?
Southern Portugal is really known for its beaches, especially in the Algarve. Mm-hmm. There's over 100 of them to choose from. So that's the main draw. But they also have some amazing initiatives happening inland in the Algarve, where they're trying to bring tourism to some of the smaller villages. And that comes in the form of protecting their traditions when it comes to handicrafts, food, and other mediums. So I think that's super interesting to dive into if you have a couple extra days as well.
Sounds great. So I assume we'll go through each of the 100 beaches in painstaking detail.
Absolutely. To be honest, I've been about 4 times now to the Algarve, and I've hit maybe 10 beaches, and I picked my top 4. So it also kind of depends on your preferences on what you're looking for, but sure, we can go through a little bit of everything. And then honestly, one of the best things you can do, whether you're by foot or by car, is to really find your own personal special beach while you're there, because they're all right next to each other.
Excellent. Now, I assume we're probably starting in Lisbon and then heading south.
Yes, you can start in Lisbon. It's about a 3-hour drive down to Faro, which is one of the major towns in the Algarve. You can also fly directly into Faro, depending if you're coming from Spain or you're coming from the UK or the US. I'm actually based in Boston, and we have a very strong Portuguese community in Boston, so they have a lot of direct flights into Portugal. You might be able to luck out with that. But otherwise, go to Lisbon first, and you can drive down. There isn't a direct train, but if you have time to kill, you can definitely take the train as well.
Okay. And is Faro where we should start then?
I would say so. That's one of the larger cities. It has an old town, and you could actually spend an afternoon there if you'd like. There's a marina, and there's a lot of tapas-style restaurants to check out in the center of town. There is so many beautiful little harbor towns and fishing villages that, honestly, I don't think you have to spend too much time there. But there's a lot of things within an hour from Faro as well. So you can take a tour, or you can take your own car from there.
Okay. Any, before we do head out, is there anything that while we're in Faro, we should make sure that we do?
I think going to the harbor area is nice. They have a chapel there that is very old and is open to the public as well. So it can get you started on some of the traditional Portuguese architecture, where everything is mostly whitewashed and has really pretty detailing along the borders in a gold or a blue. So that's something nice if you're looking for photo ops and to get a lay of the land.
Okay.
They have a really good sweet shop as well. There are a couple sweet shops right on the harbor front.
I don't know if I know what Portuguese sweets are. Or...
Oh, well, let me tell you all about Portuguese sweets. My favorite part of Portugal. They make really nice nutty sweets. That's one of their main things. Mm-hmm. They do a sweet where it's a fig and they poke little holes in the side of the fig and shove blanched almonds into it. And they call it an estrella. I could be saying that wrong because that's what Spanish sounds like, but it means a star because it turns out like that once you flour it out. It's really nice.
Okay, got it.
And then obviously the popular one is the pastéis de nata, the egg custards.
Oh, sure. Okay, that one I am more familiar with.
Yes, those are very good. And although they're traditionally from Lisbon and kind of north, you definitely can find them down in the Algarve as well. But the fig one I mentioned, that is specifically to the Algarve.
Excellent. And when you say you may be saying this wrong, we should just get this out of the way up front.
Yeah.
Neither of us speak Portuguese. You have a better excuse than I have since we had our Brazilian daughter lived with us for over 2 years and I picked up how to say good day and that was about it. But I should say that when you were saying tapas earlier, yes, we're aware. Just don't send emails that that's not the way they call it in Portugal.
Yes, I know. I think it's a whole other thing.
or something like that, and I don't remember how to pronounce it.
I should just say small plates in general, or even in like little stew pots. Mm-hmm. They usually different dishes come out and everybody eats in a family style, which is nice. But it's definitely very, very different than Spanish, I promise.
Excellent.
I met the mayor actually of Lule, which I'll talk about later. It's one of the inland towns, and he gave me a very good lesson on all of that.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that when we get to Mule. Where should we go next?
Everybody goes to the Algarve for the beaches, and I think that's where you should head to next. You can reach a beach from Faro within 10 minutes. You're definitely going to want to go a bit farther if you want to find the best ones. I would say from Faro, you should go to Lagos. That is another town, but it's more central when it comes to beach hopping. Lagos is an ancient town. It has a history that dates back more than 2,000 years, and it has really strong traditional maritime traditions. And it still does today, but obviously tourism has kind of taken over as the main economy. But you can still find a lot of that in the main maritime museum on the marina and in some of the architecture as well. So, yes, you can start in Lagos. And actually, a lot of people like to hike from there up to, there's like a 5 mile track from Lagos, and you can go along the cliffs there and then look down and almost pick a beach in that way. So that's one option. And then the other option is to drive as well, but do know that a lot of the beaches don't have big parking lots. So you're probably going to be hiking either way to get to some of the nicer ones. One of the closest beaches is the Praia Dona Ana. That one's a really nice stretch of sand, and you can set up shop down there for the day. One of the characteristics of most of the beaches in the Algarve is the limestone cliff faces. Mm-hmm. All of these beaches are almost like the UK, where you start at the top and you have to wind your way down to get all the way down to the sand. You can see the outcrops of the limestone that are still in the ocean. And then there's a lot of tunnels and a lot of caves that you can explore by foot. You just have to be really careful that you don't get caught by the tide in those caves. If you're worried about that, you can take a kayak instead.
Okay.
You can do that from Praia Dona Ana, and then also from another beach called Ponta de Piede. Those are both within a hearty walk distance from Lagos or a drive. Another thing about Lagos, well, Lagos itself is like, it's almost like Faro. It's in the same idea. You can see the city walls and then you can hang out in the marina, but it's not been taken over, but it has a very robust co-ed scene. If you like to go out and you like nightlife, this is the place to go in the Algarve. Lots of bars and restaurants and things that are open all night long. So if that's something you like to do, that's where I went to Lagos the first time 100 years ago when I was a student. That's how I got to know the Algarve the first time.
I assume you were a student in Europe at the time.
Yes, I was studying abroad in Seville in Spain.
Oh, okay.
And if you're in southern Spain, the Algarve's less than a 3-hour drive to as well. So if you wanted to double up your itinerary, it's great to do both of these. And personally, I think obviously the Algarve beaches are beautiful. The Spanish ones are nice too, but go to the Algarve for sure if you want beach time.
And a lot of the Spain, I get known to criticize European beaches in general just because I'm a little spoiled, because a lot of the beaches that I've been to in Spain have been rocky rather than sandy. My impression is that I'm going to see more sandy beaches here in the Algarve.
Definitely. Yellow sand beaches, very fine sand. And funnily enough, even though all the beaches are on the Atlantic Ocean, the water is usually very temperate. Gone at all different times of year, in November, in July, in October. And I've always been able to swim, which is a treat, especially being from New England.
Sure.
To be able to do that at any time of year, it's great in the Atlantic Ocean. So, yeah, those beaches are definitely much more sandy, which is nice.
And we should say that when you started in Faro and headed to Lagos, you headed towards the southeast point of Portugal. We're almost at the end there.
Right, right. And you can go all the way to the end, not to deviate too much, but about an hour from Lagos is Sangres, and that is known as the end of the world because it's the most southwestern tip of Europe. And that'll give you a little bit of a thrill because I was mentioning that all the beaches are surrounded by cliffs. The end of the world is a 200-foot drop down to the ocean. So a lot of people like to go to Sangres, and you can actually almost be held up by the wind because it's so strong. I would not recommend doing that too close to the edge. But it's a really interesting feeling to do that. So it's also obviously a very popular sunset location. People go there to see the sunset as well. It's beautiful.
Excellent.
If you're a history buff, you can go there as well. They have a fort and a lighthouse and a museum. And I believe the fort dates back to the 15th century.
Yeah, I think I was seeing that it was built by Henry the Navigator, but I could be mistaken.
You're absolutely right. In the Age of Discoveries. So yes, 15th century. And then other explorers have been rumored to hang out on this very spot as well, like Christopher Columbus. And these days too, the lighthouse is one of the most powerful in Europe because it's in such a precarious spot. They need it to make sure that it blasts out to all the boat traffic that goes by, which is a lot.
Excellent. And I distracted you from Lagos. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about doing there before we headed off?
I think maybe the last thing you want to do in Lagos, you can visit the other beaches as you go outside of town on your own. It's mostly for sunbathing and maybe taking a stroll. But if you'd like to do more organized things, or you're into water sports or activities while you're traveling, that you can take surf lessons, which is really popular because the waves tend to be strong in certain areas, especially when they break along the cliffs. They've found some great spots to have some surf schools. So there is one in Lagos that you can have a half day or a full day. And then the other activity that I really enjoyed, I like to do horseback riding, and there's something really special about horseback riding on the beach. So if that's something that would interest you, there is a couple companies that also do that, and they'll take you out on really spunky Portuguese horses.
Okay.
Yeah, they're fun. I rode a bit when I was young, so we had a fun guide, and he turned the other way and let us race them up and down the beach a bit. So that's really fun. But there's definitely more tame ones. They have really pretty trails that wind along the tops of the cliffs and then go down to the bottom of the beach as well.
And then I was also seeing, for history buffs, one of the darker sides of Lagos is this is where Europe's first slave market was, and they preserved that building. So if you're interested in more of that history, you can learn about it there.
They have a couple memorials down by the marina.
Mm-hmm.
They have, I forget, I wish I could remember, but it was this, they have a statue, and then obviously they have a museum as well. And I think that's super important to learn about And the Portuguese are pretty upfront about it, about making sure that people are educated about it and history doesn't repeat itself, obviously.
Excellent. Anything else in Lagos before we head off?
I think that's it. You should definitely try all their fresh seafood because it comes right off the boats. That's definitely a place to do it. They have the salt cod that's really popular mm-hmm. in Portuguese cooking. However, because it's so fresh, you don't really need to need to have the salt cod, the bacalhau. That's what it's called. They do fresh fillets. Oh gosh, it looks almost like a bass. I had the server tell me 3 times what the fish was called and still couldn't get it right. But it looks like a bass and a lot of white fish, and they have them made roasted or you can have them in stews as well.
Where to next?
So I also stayed at a really beautiful resort outside of Lagos. It's about 45 minutes, called the Vale del Olvieras, roughly. It's beautiful because it's outside of these towns, so it's very isolated. They have their own private beach, and I do recommend. The towns are beautiful. They can get a little busy during peak time, which is mostly the summer and the fall. So if you're trying to get away from the crowd, staying at one of these types of resorts is recommended.
And I want to say that you're staying at the Valley of the Olive.
Yes, the Valley of the Olives.
Okay.
It's great for groups. They have suites for families or for groups of friends, and they also have great food, and it's a very nice place to have kind of a base. And they're very good about recommending. The last trip I went on when I stayed at this place, we had our own car. So it would be a little bit difficult, honestly, if you didn't have your own transportation because it's a little out there.
Mm-hmm.
But side note, renting cars there are very affordable and they drive on the same side of the road as the US. So that's great. So you don't have to worry too much about any of that.
Well, I haven't really seen any problem in terms of driving and the traffic and those sort of things in Portugal, Spain, and that general area. Is not a scary place to drive.
No, not at all. Nice open roads, a lot of them along the coast, which is beautiful. If you're nervous about the winding along the coast, they have big highways that you can get from point A to B real quick. So, I mean, that's my preferred mode of transportation. Mm-hmm. There's definitely taxis and guides, private drivers. There's all those kinds of options too. So it really is up to you.
Okay.
After you've spent some time, maybe a day in Faro, maybe a day or two in Lagos, and then maybe another day at one of the resorts outside the city so that you can really enjoy the beach, you can consider going inland to the town of Lule. Lule is about 45 minutes from Faro. So all of this is within 2 hours of each other, and nothing's really that far, which mm-hmm. is nice. And Lule is actually the biggest town in the Algarve. There's about 70,000 people there. And they have always been a little bit sleepy because their main thing is agriculture, a lot of farms, the villages are small, but they've been, since 2015, been working on some initiatives to try to entice more tourists to come up and visit them. So one of their main initiatives is called Lule Creativo. And this is their direct partnership with the villages and people there to teach tourists about handicrafts and about the skills that they have been doing for centuries. And it's super interesting because it's not like a museum. It's all hands-on. They throw you right in and you get to meet people who live there and do what they're doing. And it was really interesting. It was one of the highlights of my entire trip. As much as I love the beach, I really enjoyed hanging out in Lule.
And I can't say that I could name a single Portuguese handicraft. Unless we count port wine, but we're in the wrong region for that. So,
well, we can skip some of the Portuguese terms, but I can definitely talk to you about it. It's really interesting. Well, olives is a big thing, just like sure. what that resort was named after. If we're just talking in an agricultural sense, cork is a huge mm-hmm. thing. So that was interesting, not to be naive, but I didn't really know where cork came from.
It's very interesting to look at, too, the harvesting sure. of the cork bark.
That's what I loved. Yeah. You know, we would just drive through these fields and fields and fields of the trees.
And let's not assume that everybody knows where it comes from. So where does it come from?
Just like I didn't. Yeah. I thought it came, I shouldn't even say this, it's awful. I thought it came from the sea, like a sponge for a minute. a while ago. But anyway, it comes from the bark of trees. Mm-hmm. And they can only harvest it, I want to say, once every 5 or 10 years. It's not often. And they do that too to make sure the tree is healthy and can continue to produce. So when they do strip them, it's a section. It's not all the way down to the trunk. It's just an area of it. And it looks darker. It's really interesting how they do it. So they just take off these big strips. Mm-hmm. And the cork itself is used in 100 different ways. Traditionally, it's used for baskets and purse type things, like backpack type things. And now, obviously, it's used in souvenirs, everything from bottle openers to magnets. But a lot of it is not, they have put on some regulations, so they don't use real cork for a lot of the souvenirs. But that's also why it's great to go to Lule, because they have their own headquarters, the Lule Creativo organization. Mm-hmm. And you can buy whatever you want to buy right from them directly. And it's real cork and it's made by those people. So I think that's a good initiative that they have there.
Okay.
Speaking of their headquarters, if you land in Lule, that's probably the best place to go first, because they will have a list of events and workshops and everything that is going on that week. And they tend to change fairly often. There are some other places you can go specifically, but you can go there first, depending on what you're interested in. Their main activities and their main outputs is jewelry.
Butcher Box is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first Butcher Box. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way, as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Traditional dance, natural painting, gastronomy, obviously, and then graphic design is another big thing. It's a more modern thing that they've been working on, but that's interesting as well. So you can do all those kinds of things hands-on with the people who specialize in them. The headquarters itself also, by the way, is in an 18th century manor downtown. So that in itself is interesting to see up close. So yeah, it depends on your interests. I did a little bit of everything. The first thing they actually had me do was learn the traditional dancing.
Okay.
Didn't go so well, but they were very kind and patient about it. It's called Corridinho, the dance. Mm-hmm. It's done in a circle, and women wear embroidered skirts and men wear flat brimmed hats. And it's done with drums and a violin type looking instrument, maybe more of a fiddle.
Okay.
So that's really fun. So besides learning the steps yourself, which they attempt to do, they'll put on performances in the square, which is really nice, usually once a week. That time I was there, it was on a Thursday, but that might change as well, which you can ask about at the center. So that was really fun to do. And then the graphic design, like I mentioned, was a whole other thing to try out. They have a center called Graphic Commercial, and it's fairly new in the last decade at least, but they're doing a lot of printmaking when it comes to like graphic tees and posters and things like that. But they are hearkening back to some of the more traditional designs that you see Portuguese tiles that are blue and white.
Mm-hmm.
They will print things like that on the t-shirts, and they're trying to bring in old and new together.
Okay, and that some of those are Moorish-inspired or influenced designs, because we're in an area that used to be Moorish, about the 800s to about the 1400s, roughly.
Lule has preserved a couple of Islamic bathhouses that you can check out. They're also embracing that side of them, which is pretty interesting.
Basically, everybody's bell tower used to be a minaret.
Yes. Yes, that's kind of how it's changed hands a little bit back and forth. for sure. That is a big warehouse type thing. So it's more outside of Lule, and it's just showing the progression of how the city is evolving to meet new demands of creativity and supply and demand and all that outside of tradition. Because it's great that they make things, jewelry and baskets out of the cork and the reeds and everything, but they need to think forward as well.
Well, the other trend we're seeing in tourism in general is there is, especially the younger generation, wants to have more activities, more participatory things, and not just sit at a beach. Sitting at a beach is fun too, but I can see why they're doing that and trying to bring in some of the tourist dollars for that. Excellent.
Yes, I think that especially if you have a good chunk of time down in the Algarve, and obviously whenever you're traveling, this kind of immersive travel, cultural travel in tourism is a win-win situation, because you get to do something unique and the local economy is supported by it. And overall, a good thing for cultural exchange. Beaches are beautiful, but sometimes the best stories aren't really about hanging out on the beach. It's doing some of these other things. For example, actually in Lule, I almost had to go to the hospital.
This is not something we're going to recommend people do on their vacation.
But no, I do not. But we did a beautiful hike through the countryside, through the olive groves and the cork fields. Mm-hmm. And then we stopped in the middle of it to make some reed tools. So they were just having us make something really simple. They were making these beautiful toys, and they had these flutes that they would make out of the reeds that just grew. The woman who was showing us just went over to the side of the woods and started hacking at the materials and brought them back to the table. So she's making flute, and they try to get me to make a keychain, and I almost, I got
Slice
my finger pretty bad.
With
yeah,
the, I did. Reed, yeah.
And it was nobody's fault but my own. So obviously it was fine. I love that as well, because they, again, brought us out into nature. It wasn't just at a museum. You know, this is what they would do on a daily basis, is go out into the field, find these materials, and use them in their daily lives. So while we were out there, we stopped at a place called Sierra da Janela. And it's actually a hostel. They call it a hostel. I think it's much more of a quaint Airbnb type situation. It was beautiful. This is interesting. If you go to Lule, you can go to this place. It's about 10 minutes outside of downtown. And you stay there in one of their houses. They have individual houses. And then you learn the handicrafts while you stay with the couple that owns it. They're semi-retired and they're very kind. So when we went there after the reeds making on the hike, we learned about making those estrellas, the figs and the almonds from the local women. So that was really fun. And then we also attempted basket weaving, and everyone got a good chuckle out of that one, because all the visitors were absolutely horrific at it. And I think they really enjoyed that more than they should have. But it was definitely fun. And they bring in someone to the hostel. If they have guests who are interested in those workshops, they'll bring a guide for the day to translate, which is nice as well. The couple who owns it do speak a little bit of English, but if you'd like the guide there, it's nice because they have everybody come over, the women who live down the street and their cousins from the other place, and everybody comes over to do the basket weaving or do the dessert making, and then we all had a meal at the end.
Did you arrange that ahead of time before you were coming, or is this something you stumbled upon, or can one arrange it ahead of time?
Yeah, actually the Lule Creativo people organized it. So you can, again, go to that center in the middle of town and ask them to stay at that hostel. You can also book the hostel on booking.com or anywhere as well. So So both, you can either go to Lule once you get there, the Creative Oat headquarters, ask them to arrange this for an overnight or just to go up for the workshop, or you can book on booking.com and then after that contact them via email, which they have on their website, and then you can arrange the workshop from there.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to their website in the show notes. They do have an English portion of the website too.
They do, as far as I recall. They were very proud of it. So that was great. And the final thing about the food at this hostel and all the places we went in Lule, it's all mostly sourced from the area. Mm-hmm. So if you're into farm-to-table food, this is where to go. They grew the almonds and the figs on site. And then we had an afternoon tea, and they had made marzipan sweets. That's also pretty popular in the area. And honey cake from their own beehives. Beekeeping has become a big thing in Lule as well, to help with the agriculture, help with the local flora, and then obviously the bee population too. So that's really fun to know that they're doing those initiatives as well.
Excellent. Where to next?
I think that's about the end of my itinerary.
Excellent.
You can spend a nice few days on the beach, a few days in the fishing villages and the harbor towns, head up inland into Lule, and then you could head back down to Faro or back up 3 hours to Lisbon and continue on your journey from there.
Excellent. And in terms of food, we talked a little bit about seafood. Are there any other food things we should try in the region or places we should go?
Sure. In Lule, they have a lot of great tasquinhas, which is not a tapas place, but it is a casual cafe where you can get small plates to enjoy. I really, again, enjoyed the seafood. One of the dishes that you'll find that's cold that you can start your meal with is an octopus salad, if octopus is your thing. But when it's really fresh, it's really nice. And it comes with potatoes and peppers and onions and things like that. One of the best ones, I think, in Lule is the Tasquina du Lagar. Mm-hmm. And that's right downtown. You'll see the giant church right in the center of town, and it's to your right. So that's pretty close.
Excellent. Anything else before we get to a couple of our wrap-up questions?
I don't think so. I think I've just about covered everything you could do in the Algarve.
Excellent. You are standing in the prettiest spot in the Algarve. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Well, I do love the end of the world. I think that's one of my favorite places. But I will say, I think my absolute favorite beach was the Praia do Cavalo.
Okay.
And that is...
Is that where you went with the horses?
No, that is a whole other beach hike.
Okay.
That is about 20 minutes from the resort that I mentioned, the Valle del Verias. Praia do Cavalo is a beach that you have to hike to a little bit. So it's a little bit of a challenge to get to.
Okay.
Maybe about 15 minutes. You have to park up at the top of the cliffs and then make your way down. You have to go through almost a cave tunnel too to get there.
Okay.
But people know about this, so you will eventually come out onto the sand, and it's pretty lively. But it's one of the prettiest places I've ever seen in my life. The whole beach is surrounded by those limestone outcrops that jut right out of the ocean, and the water is beautiful. And sometimes you'll see the kids jumping off the sides of the little cliff faces, which made me really nervous. But it was a beautiful environment, and people seemed to be very relaxed. It was a nice mix of from people who live there and people who are visiting. And I definitely think if you're in that area, that is the beach to go to.
Well, and we should say you promised us 4 beaches. By my count, I think we've done 3 so far, 2
did
or 3 so far.
3? Did I miss one?
Did you miss
one? I know. We did. Praia de Benaguil.
Okay.
That one's really nice. That is next to the fishing village of Benaguil, which again is all within an hour of everything else that I've mentioned. So if you're looking for outside of Faro and Lagos, this is a smaller village. Mm-hmm. So you can explore that and then go to the beach. And the beach itself is very nice, but the draw there is the caves. You can go by foot to the caves in Benaguil, and that is gorgeous. It's almost dome-shaped, and there's a skylight, you know, a natural skylight coming down. Mm-hmm. So that's very pretty. You can go by foot, and I'm pretty sure even at high tide it's accessible, but just be mindful of that just in case.
Okay.
So there's my four.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in southern Portugal.
I guess when I was a student, it was a shock to see the drinking culture is not, it's not excessive, but it's accessible. But I love that people are out on the streets enjoying a glass of red wine or whatever, almost any time of day. And then people are very keen on getting you into their bars in their cafe. You'll hear people shouting at you in a very friendly way, offering little shots or a taste of the local wine. And they say their grandmother made the wine or whatever they have to tell you to try to get you in there. That mostly happened in Lagos. And I really thought it was funny. And then they would start arguing with each other, two cafes next to each other, saying, no, mine's better. Mine's better. And they'll get into this whole thing. But very welcoming, and it would always crack me up when they would start trying to compete for your attention.
I don't know what this term for that is in Portugal, but in I think in Greece it's the kalamaki. It's the mouth. Yes. It's the person who's outside trying to drum up business.
Yeah, it had a similar vibe to Greece. I would give you that for that kind of peacocking, if you will. In a good way.
Well, and I was looking at the pictures of the caves you just mentioned in Benguel, and I think this is the picture that I have always seen when I see it. People talk about the Algarve is, you should go to the Algarve. It has something like this, and I'll try and put a picture to that in the show notes. But I think that is a quintessential Algarve sea cave picture.
Absolutely.
Excellent. And you have written about Portugal, I'm assuming, on purewonder.com. If we wanted to send you, that was a question.
Oh, sorry.
Have you written about Portugal on purewonder.com?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Eileen Cotter-Wright, if we wanted to send people to your best post about southern Portugal, where are we going to send them?
Sure. I actually have a 10-day itinerary for a road trip through Portugal and southern Spain that I think is pretty interesting. I know that's a little bit longer, but the first part is all Portugal for about 5 to 7 days. So that's a good place to start.
We are aware that some people will do more than 7 days. We are not offended by it. So
okay, gosh. I definitely find that. That was one of my favorite trips down there. So that was really fun. I think that would be a good place to start for some recommendations. I give some more specific restaurants and places to stay and that you can definitely check out.
Excellent.
And then I also have an article talking a little bit more about the beaches themselves that you can look up as well.
We'll link to that as well. Well, and I should say that if people are interested in a Portuguese vacation and you do have more time, we do have at least 3 other episodes on Portugal. Mm. One that's southern Portugal, but more of a bike orientation. One that is Lisbon and one that is cruising the Douro River out of Porto. So check those out as well. And Eileen, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and telling us about your love for southern Portugal.
Thanks again, Chris.
I had an exchange with Andrew on the Amateur Traveler Facebook page recently this week that it nearly made me laugh or cry. And that was because I've been posting photos from the trip that I took to Normandy a month and a half ago or so, just finally got around to editing those photos. So I've been putting up some lovely photos. And I put up a photo of Rouen, of the cathedral there. And Andrew said, don't know if you've got an itinerary, but Irita and Honfleur are both lovely and quite close to Rouen. And I said, oh yes, I talked about Honfleur in one of the latest posts on Amateur Traveler. And Andrew admitted he's a little behind in the podcast. I said, no, I'm talking about a blog post. And even though he's been my impression is longtime listener of the show, he didn't know Amateur Traveler has a blog. And I'm afraid that he's probably not alone. We get more people to download the podcast than we do to check out the blog, but there are actually more blog posts on Amateur Traveler than there are podcasts, in part just because podcasts are harder, and that there are some guest posts there as well. But they include this week, for instance, a post about a 3-day itinerary in Normandy, a post about different routes, 8 different routes that are part of the Camino de Santiago in Spain, and another post on unusual summer programs and travel programs for kids, as well as one about exploring the southern tip of France down by in French Catalonia in the border with Spain. And that's just this week. So check out the blog at amateurtraveler.com. You can see the blog, the podcast, the video podcast, or also the This Week in Travel episodes all at the same site. The other thing that's going on this week in the private Facebook group, amateurtraveler.com/trips, is we're voting on where to go in 2020. So if you want to take part in that, get in there real quick and put your vote in, especially if you're looking to go with us. With that, I'm going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, or join the mailing list where you could get reminded of things like blog posts. And thanks so much for listening.